I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello and welcome to episode 181 of What Most People Think. And we're not saying the New Year thing. Anybody that's still saying the New Year thing, it's their way of letting you know that they don't have original thoughts, or they don't know you well enough, or they've just fucking given up, frankly. So I'm going to say, I hope that this first, because last week, I don't know what the fuck last week was, that kind of dry run at January, just give you a little taste of January, and then we are really into, it's a drudgy sort of month. But luckily, today, making a much demanded return to the show is the brilliant Alan Cochran. Alan, welcome back to the show.
Happy New Year.
I mean, should we just do that the whole show? I'll just lob up juicy half follies. Beautiful. Smoked it to the boundary.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to be back. I'm not sure I believe that I'm much demanded as a guest, but I'm happy to return.
Untrue. You are very much demanded by the patrons and our super patron, David Domain, who is the sort of CEO of the Border Patreons. He is a massive fan, has demanded you back on a lot recently.
Oh, I recognise him. I think he came to my show in Leicester, and I've interacted with him, if it's the same guy.
He is definitely like the same guy. The truth is, when I say much demanded, almost always that's a lie. But in this instance, it's just a rare occasion. There was one bloke that was fucking adamant. So you are now, I mean, I guess, perceived, given the things that you talk about and your perhaps, you know, radical belief in the responsibility of the individual, are you one of the baddies comedically now?
Is that what I've got? Radical belief in responsibility of the individual?
It feels radical, doesn't it?
More people have that than admit it, I think. Like,
I 100% agree.
You scratch the surface. I think loads of people, in fact, years ago, me and Mickey Flanagan and a few other people went to see the Scottish rapper guy. Is it Darren McGarvey? Do you know who
yes.
I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No, he writes books now. Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote a book about Poverty Safari or something like that.
Yeah.
And he has tons of moments where he talks about exactly what you've just mentioned. People in working class sort of communities or people in council estates, like, they know that some of the ones that are doing worse than they could be are doing worse than they could be because of their own behaviour. They know that.
How
so I don't think it's that
you.
Radical.
How dare you? It's the patriarchy. It's the patriarchy and the Tories. I wonder who else we could just momentarily.
I blame the Tories. I mean, I'm not a Tory, but I sort of roll my eyes at how much blame the Tories there is. And it's so weird, isn't it? I think people get a really fixed thing of what they like to blame. Like, I've definitely got a thing where I found lockdowns pretty objectionable. And so it's a thing that I bring up all the time conversationally. And for everybody else, that's Brexit. Like, everybody else wants to blame Brexit for everything, especially in dressing rooms on the comedy circuit. And I find myself thinking, wow, if you're complaining about the cost of Brexit now, having just had lockdowns, I said, I think that's like the equivalent of regretting a particular cafe latte on the day your house is repossessed. It just seems wrong to me, but I'm also, you know, as I go through this kind of transformation to Alan 2.0, I am definitely realizing that the things that bother me in the world don't bother everybody else, and vice versa.
And I'd imagine particularly the comedy green room experience has changed for you. I mean, are you a fully fledged baddie now? What's going on?
I don't know. I I mean, I think I was on the left. I've still never voted for a right-wing party, which sounds really plaintive of me to say, like, oh, I'm not one, guys, I'm not one. But I think, basically, I think I'm not very happy to sort of let other comedians do my thinking for me. And I think that's my problem in dressing rooms.
I think that is the best bit of advice I could give anybody. If you know comedians, is comedians, they will entertain you. They might even inform you sometimes by accident. But in terms of advice, like simple advice, like when I remember when I first started speaking about my politics, so I'd voted for the Tories in 2010, and I think at a local election, I decided to start speaking about it in 2013. There was a couple of grandees of the circuit who literally sat me down and went, look, you've got to stop this. But not just on like, well, you shouldn't think this, but this is not going to work out for you. I don't know if that was a kind of mafia, like, hey, this is not going to work out so well. Yeah, things happen. Things fall off shelves. So I think comedians would be the first to admit that we're not the best. Well, the other comedians aren't good at giving advice. We all like to think that we are individually.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to put advice in Room 101 when I went on Room 101 because I think most advice is bollocks. Like, it's terrible. I think good advice basically starts and ends at don't eat yellow snow.
Yeah.
That's it. That's good. And then the rest of it is mostly hot air, unless you're going to an expert. You know, don't go to a comedian if you want pensions advice. Don't go to a comedian if you want how to get up early on a morning advice. Like, just
no. If you want like a distracting and entertaining take on something, that's what we're really good at. We're good at takes. Like, have you ever thought about it this way? However briefly.
but my feeling in dressing rooms is sort of strange. Like, I feel like I think it's become a bit out there now that I'm not joining in with the identity politics sort of.
Yeah.
Nonsense. I think, like, I haven't really got that much that's very provocative material wise. I'm not even really doing jokes about atheism that I might have done 5 years ago or 10 years ago, which was one of the things where it all started to unravel for me. Like, I remember getting quite interested in atheism and reading up about it, and then starting to speak to people on the left about, I don't think Islamophobia as a term is quite accurate. I think there's sort of anti-Muslim bigotry, which we should all be worried about, but Islamophobia and the defensiveness from people on the left when I started kind of, it really made me go, oh, you guys don't care about what's true. You care about what team people are on. And
so, or how things feel, I mean, as well, you know.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of hashtag feelings, and I'm not sure I'm cut out for that because I don't have as many as everybody else, it seems. And a few of the people that I think would probably think I'm an Islamophobe were exactly the same people that thought that Qatar's World Cup hosting was an outrage. And you think, come on, guys. Like, you can't butter your bread on both sides on this. Like, either we care about gay rights and we think Sharia law is bad for gay rights, or we don't. It doesn't mean that you're a bigot. And also, I think sometimes...
Well, I noticed you didn't say anything about the original Greek Olympiad in 1706. Look, I think that's an interesting idea about what is your big thing. I mean, if this was a radio show, I'd be going, call in. But I'm interested, so people email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. What is the thing? It might be Brexit, or it might be lockdowns, or it might even be the Magna Carta. Where did you think it all started going wrong? On the subject of David Domain earlier, we have Domain Talking Point. So he picks up on stuff from the previous show. So we had a great episode with Jen Brister, whose clips, I mean, I think I probably just got her at the point where maybe a week later she would never do a podcast like mine again because she's gone super ridiculously viral. Oh, mate, on Instagram, incredible numbers. We were discussing... We were discussing Wes Streeting once, you know, and of the Labour people, he's somebody I feel I could do business with, essentially. And a couple of people emailed him thinking...
Slight gangster vibe about you when you say that.
He's a man I could do... So does Wes, though. I think me and Wes could meet at a lock-up in East London at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. a rainy grey Tuesday and exchange briefcases. But I made a point where we talk about Wes and then Peter Mandelson, and I said I think he's like Jacob Rees-Mogg's funky cousin, and I meant that about Mandelson, but some people thought I meant that about Wes Streeting. And look, I think Wes has veered a little bit to the right. I don't think he's gone that far. And then David also, he picks up on some stats and some issues that we discussed. And I, you know, there's this old thing about Wilson closed more pits than Thatcher.
Mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, I sort of speculated that maybe Thatcher, whatever the numbers were, Thatcher maybe enjoyed it a bit more. But he has the numbers. You'd hope that she did. I mean, you know, she didn't seem to enjoy much, but... 253 pits shut during Wilson's premierships and 115 closed during Thatcher, right? So we're getting on over double. But as a caveat, the Wilson government closed pits that were almost defunct and miners were redeployed. So it's not irrelevant as a stat, but it's a good one to pull out, isn't it, to a lefty that you just want to misdirect, right. I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I was on the news quiz once, and people were so sort of lobotomized about how Trump was a baddie that they were all taking the side of an Iranian warlord that Trump had sort of surgically executed with a drone.
Yeah.
and I was like, I think this is a good story. I think Trump's coming off all right here. He's killed a baddie, no civilian casualties, and I brought up Obama's use of drones and killing baddies and killing goodies, and yeah. It's just one of those many uncomfortable truths that people don't like you to bring up.
Yeah,
but I say, I mean, all this, and I'm not even that political. I don't even feel like I'm.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of facts like that, aren't there? I mean, like Obama, I think their deportations were higher. Maybe they were higher in total because he was, you know, president for longer. But I have to ask myself the question, is my reason for saying that I really fundamentally care about the number of deportations or that I just wish to confound somebody in the moment?
Yeah, yeah. I think Obama played more golf than Trump did whilst he was in office or something. There was another thing, like, you know, the thing that everybody sort of hits Trump for like being absent and playing golf, and Obama played loads of golf whilst working.
He grabbed more pussy. He didn't. He didn't.
Trump did it.
No. I don't think.
The vulgar phrase, which is part of the problem with Trump. Like, I think people didn't like the vulgarity.
I mean, it's interesting to talk.
The amount of pearl clutching about Trump being too vulgar that comes from the modern left. Really, it's like they're all a bit like this. You know, fanning like, oh, he said something rude on Twitter. You think, well, you say much ruder things on stage.
Well, I mean, is that thing of you know, we've lived for an age where definitely how people make you feel with what they say has become, and maybe this isn't actually a new phenomenon, but it's become a lot more important than what people do. I mean, I was doing a topical show and I wanted to talk about Trump and I was being critical of him. I was saying that I didn't want him to be president anymore, but I was sort of saying that also, and this is not an unfamiliar argument, that his foreign policy wasn't a complete disaster. If anything, you know, it was quite effective in some ways, but the pushback on me saying that on that show, it was like basically I stuck on a fucking MAGA hat and had the, what was the Confederate flag like draped over my shoulders?
Yeah. Well, that is, I mean, there was only one way to think about Trump if you were on the UK comedy circuit, and that was that he was an existential threat to humanity. You couldn't think that some of the stuff that he said was funny. You had to think, like, this guy's a baddie and I'm terrified. Whereas I didn't ever buy that, really. I thought, you know.
Part of the reason I started speaking about politics originally was just this kind of goody-baddie narrative and the pantomimic nature of the discussion of British politics. You know, I just thought on a simple level, like, however, I mean, in the future I could vote differently again, but I just didn't fucking buy it, quite simply, the idea that in something, you know, where roughly half of the, you know, over time, a very similar number of people end up thinking one thing, a similar number of the other. And I just don't think when, apart from various terrible points in history, like the Third Reich and so on, that it's ever that fucking clear cut. That was it. And I just thought, I think other people think this too. You know, it was sort of written into the constitution of comedy. That was what bugged me in a way, was that, you know, any art form that sort of said, well, you can't say this. Or I mean, even that goes for punching down as well. People go, you can't punch down. Well, you fucking can, but you've just got to have a plan of why you're doing it, how you're going to get out of it, what your real purpose is.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've never really thought that punching down argument held much water either. It seems it's just another subtle way of telling comics what jokes they can do. And I think all of this boils down to the bit that I find really difficult now is that it used to be a legit defense that you could say I was joking and all right, it might have misfired.
Yeah.
I didn't hit the target and I've hurt your feelings, but I promise you. I was joking. But now it seems like if you were joking and it misfires, you've failed a purity test. And if you joke and it misfires and the target was Boris Johnson, then that's fine, you're still pure. But if you joke and it misfires and the target was a homeless guy, you're a baddie and you should never be forgiven. Like, what
most people think. So a bit of big news for the patrons. So as if I was talking for a long time about doing an online gig in the middle of January, but two things occurred to me. Is one, we've got this Jeff Norcott and Friends gig at the end of January 25th and the one at the beginning of March in Leeds. And I suddenly thought, if you're coming to those or you're coming to one of the work in progress ones, it's going to be the same fucking material. So I thought, I've only got so many things to say. And then I thought, I recorded my last tour show. I always forget the name of it. This isn't a good sign, is it? I Blame the Parents. There you go. I recorded that and I thought, why not just upload that to Patreon? Just throw it out there as a thank you for all the support last year, streaming exclusively on Patreon from the 16th of January. And that is at no extra charge to you, though I would say it did cost me money to make. So if you thought, oh, that seems good on Jeff, you know, I might just up my pledge or I might temporarily up my pledge. It would all be greatly received. But look, I'm not 100% expecting. Yeah, some of you, you're doing all right. Let's be honest. Some of you are doing all right. So on that note, we have a couple of new patrons. One, I think, is a returning patron, Christian Corley. Was it Christine Corley? I can't say a name like that without thinking, what's the story, Christine Corley? I mean, I wonder if that's how her friends... I don't know. I'm pretty sure I used to have a patron called Christian Corley, and in this day and age, Alan, you know, it's dangerous to presume, isn't it? And then what we do is we've got a new patron, and what we do is to greet them, we take the piss out of them based on their name. So we speculate on what kind of person they might be. So we've got Martin Ireland. That is... Oh. And that, you do get that, right? You get people whose surnames are countries. So you get Dave England. You get Steve Bolivia.
Fred Trinidad and Tobago.
Well, that would be like a double-barreled name, wouldn't it?
Yeah, he's posh.
But Martin Ireland, there's a place near where I don't want to give away my location too much, but there's a really small village near where I live called Ireland. And so anybody that moves there, it often creates confusion with the family. They go, I'm moving to Ireland. They go, for fuck's sake, we won't see the grandkids grow up. They go,
well, that's fun, isn't it? Like there's a Melbourne in Derbyshire, isn't there?
Is there?
I'm moving to Melbourne. See ya.
Oh, brilliant. We always said this day would come. You knew we wanted grandkids. You knew we want them. And then the first sign of hot weather... it's another strange name trend. So if there's any other patrons or listeners that have got is your name the name, what's the weirdest country name? I mean, I've gone full FM radio DJ now, and I don't apologize.
I like it.
And we got another patron who's upped his pledge, and this is before I've even put the special out, Alan. But he said he's upped my pledge because when I name checked him, his name's Peter Humphrey, and I said that he had the name of a CDT teacher, right? Peter Humphrey, Mr. Humphreys. It sounds like a CDT teacher. Now he said, for the extra £2, can I speculate on a scandal that is involved with me? Oh, a scandal that was involving Peter Humphrey, the Peter Humphrey scandal.
I think it's going to be a health and safety one, isn't it? He wasn't sharp on the goggles. He was like a rogue CDT teacher and... somebody lost an eye or a finger or something.
That is a rogue CDT teacher. And it's getting called into the head's office like he's going in to see the chief. God damn it, Humphreys. We've had this conversation before. Peter Humphrey, I mean, the other one could be the Peter Humphrey scandal. I'm sort of thinking of it now more as like a Wikipedia entry. Could be selling exam answers to kids.
Oh, yeah. I think there's quite a lot of that nowadays, isn't there? It's probably one of those things that's moved online, though, isn't it? Like so many things.
The dark, yeah, Silk Road now. You get underpaid CDT teachers just knocking out exam answers. I mean, yeah, the Breaking Bad sort of reboot won't be... that would be a much tamer way of coming at that story, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A science teacher has a terminally ill son, so he starts selling exam answers online. That doesn't land in the same way.
I wonder what they make now, because like the old jokes was always about people making ashtrays in woodwork or CDT. And I've got an old key ring that I made. I was particularly bad with my hands. I'm rubbish at anything practical.
Oh, me too, yeah.
But I imagine now they're making like iPad stands or I don't know.
Selfie sticks?
Oh, yeah, that would be good. In fact, one of my many jokes that didn't work was that I said that I thought people that used selfie sticks should be kept at arm's length. it's worked better on here than it ever did on stage.
I don't see why. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense why they don't work. I mean, it is a genuine thing. Like, it's politically incorrect, I guess, to have kids making ashtrays. And the other one was in food, home ec or whatever, it was that pizza bread. Have they moved beyond just fucking bread with tomato and cheese on?
Oh, man. I cannot tell you the sense of panic in my home when I was at school when we realised that we needed ingredients for a cookery day. The scramble to find an egg and butter and whatever it was just always panic stations. Oh, man. I do not miss that.
You'd rather find out that you were, a sudden eviction was looming
than
you needed a quarter of an ounce of flour.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're going to do a thank you and a fuck you. So it's over to you, Alan, a bit of gratitude and a bit of bile. So we start off with the gratitude. What are you grateful for?
Well, I do quite a lot of the old hashtag practice gratitude. I try and do it pretty often. But I mean, this is going to sound mawkish, but very grateful to the just general bread and butter comedy circuit. Mm. Like lockdowns and then being on tours that are sometimes hit, sometimes miss. It really makes you glad that somebody else is going, do you want to do a gig for me? And then I'll send you the money the following Tuesday and I'll take all of the risk. And you just turn up and tell 20 or 30. I mean, I love it. I practice gratitude on that all the time as I'm driving home with my... heated seats on. I've got one more gratitude if you're interested.
This is brilliant. No one's, people are normally reluctant to even do one. This is fantastic.
I've got loads. We took in a Ukrainian because actually I'm not a bad person. I'm not a thought criminal. we took in a Ukrainian. We've got a nice big house and, you know, I've worked hard for it and blah, blah, blah. We've worked hard for it. And we were like, we've got a spare room. Let's get a Ukrainian and we can, you know, get some virtue signaling points amongst my colleagues. Yeah. And she came and it didn't work out. We weren't good enough for her. She was a bit mental and didn't like us. So she looked at this. She looked at this life that I've built up for us and went, nah, not for me. Basically,
that's incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. Someone with fuck all basically said, what you've got is not good enough. I'm off.
Fuck all other than standards. Turns out she still had standards.
Yeah, she still had standards. I would suggest slightly odd ones. But now that she's gone, the house... I feel really grateful because she was a bit of a cloud in the house. And once somebody a bit toxic and miserable has left the home, you start thinking, oh, this is great here, isn't it? So I appreciate that's normally, a slightly unusual bit of gratitude. But
that would normally be relatives for most people, I think. Most people have just probably had that experience over Christmas. They had their own version of an ungrateful Ukrainian refugee in their house.
Yeah, we had a three-week Ukrainian refugee woman stay and then fuck off. And
that is hilarious. There you go. Commission that sitcom, Channel 4.
I've been saying on stage in a strange turn of events, I now find myself pro-Russia. that's a bit of mischief, not to be taken seriously, everyone.
Yeah, but if they're all like that, you see where he's coming from. Do you know what I mean? And the fuck you. Come on, we need to know that you've got a bit of anger in your heart.
Oh, man. Weird car crimes. In the last year, I've had two weird car crimes happen to me. I had an old Honda that I had bought for 950 quid and that I loved. Mm. I did like 30,000 miles in it and it was great, petrol. And then one day I woke up and I went to it to go off somewhere and it made a really weird Harley Davidson noise. And it turned out that somebody had stolen the catalytic converter. Do you know about this as a crime?
No, so I didn't know that happened.
They go under your car and they use a handheld and whatever it is, grinding thing, where they basically just chop out this bit of your car exhaust because there's precious metals in them, particularly on old Hondas. And it just, it wrecked the car. So I in the end, the potential bill for the repairs were so high that I just scrapped the car and had to change car.
You like, steal the fucking car, mate. Steal the car.
Totally. I would have felt happier if they'd just stolen the car. And then a couple of months ago, I went out to my newer car and somebody had nicked my registration plates, which again, was ridiculously inconvenient because you then can't drive and you have to order some new ones and you have to either go to Halfords with your V5 document or get a garage that you know to order them and fit them and... Oh, what a hassle. So, yeah, my fuck you goes to weird car crimes.
And also, with having your registration plates nicked, you're probably sweating out looking for the next diamond heist or something that you can be linked to.
And somebody in the garage said, oh, yeah, they'll be filling up with fuel all the time. He actually said petrol, but I said fuel because I can't. You know, when people say, oh, I've got to go and fill up with petrol, and then they put diesel in. I'm such a prick. I find it quite annoying. So I always think...
Oh, do you know, I get that with energy drinks, because I think that in most cases, if you get a diet Red Bull, that's not an energy drink at all. It's got no energy. It's got no energy in. And it's the same as when people say full fat Coke. Fat is is not the fucking issue with Coke. It's not full fat at all. Cup. It's completely different food groups. See, these are the things that we really get exercised about. But I suppose we should also talk about a bit of politics. So I'm just going to... Sorry, I didn't mention that we were going to do this before, but as we came to record, there was something in the Commons this afternoon about the union. So Angela fucking Rayner, eh? You're going to take that. I had this idea last year that she's kind of a bit like, you know, like a girl that's stirring up a fight at school. She's basically saying to the British public, you're going to fucking take that. Fucking laughing at you, mate. Fucking laughing at you. But I think I admire her, though, and I think she's a good operator in the Commons. And so she destroyed Transport Secretary. Is he Transport Secretary? Grant Shapps. And destroyed, in social media terms, normally means made a succession of fair points about this union bill. So the government, they had this this manifesto pledge in 2019, which was about minimum service for certain public sector workers. So I think this relates to ambulance workers. It relates to nuclear disarmament or something weird, like basically the way that you get rid of fucking uranium. Right. Which seems fair. Fire service and rescue, border control, and education. I just wanted to sort of like get your take on it. I mean, there's part of me that goes, in the midst of what is quick becoming a general strike, the optics of bringing this up are always going to play out differently. It does kind of bother me that strikes can genuinely make it more likely that you'll die. I think that's fair. But also, I think the government trying to throw education in with that feels massively fucking opportunistic as well. I don't want teachers to strike, but I don't think you can necessarily equate it with fire and rescue, ambulance and CDT.
I mean, if the teachers are going to try and go on strike, I think the government should go. I mean, come on, you had the pandemic as a holiday, guys. You don't need more time off, do you? Surely.
Hey, and then shuffle your papers, just like a comic, go, oh, you lot, fucking so serious these days.
I get a bit of pushback from teachers, but I've been taking the piss out of teachers from before the pandemic, so it seems, you know. As to the union thing, I don't know. I don't know where I stand on that. That would be interesting because, you know, Alan 2.0 doesn't. And I quite freely admit that there's loads of things that I haven't made up my mind about. I changed my position. Yeah. I used to disagree with marriage as an idea, and I'm married now. And I think, you know, when you look at more and more of the data as to what actually affects kids' life's outcomes, I think stable home with two parents in it is one of the things that really turbocharges the chance of somebody having good outcomes compared to bad outcomes. And I say that as somebody that grew up in a single parent family. So, you know, I'm not belittling single parents, which was very popular from the Tories when I was at school. They hated single moms.
They need to get back into that, I think.
That would be fun.
That was a USP. I mean, single mums, they've had a bit of a fucking easy ride, even in the austerity years. No one ever really went for...
not only have they had an easy ride, it's become desirable, which is, you know, mind-blowing given where it was.
I always thought we've gone off topic a bit. I always thought people sort of said, look, it's better to not be apart than be in an unhappy marriage. I go, yeah, but it's probably better to be in a slightly unhappy marriage than be apart.
Yes, I think that's it. And then you end up sounding like those traditionalists that say, well, you should be working through problems for the long term. And that, you know, I think there's an argument for that. As I get older, I see more and more of the traditionalists having a point.
Well, I mean, the government with the unions, I mean, he said trying to anchor it back. Interesting because the government, I wonder, are the Tories trying to stoke this to a critical mass where it gets to the point where they're looking back in the history books, where you get to where you go, who runs this country, the government or the unions? The only problem with that strategy is the unpopularity of the government means that the public might answer that question with, well, fuck it, the unions. That's the problem with that.
Yes. Yeah. I think I wonder how much the general public might get fed up of it, though. I do wonder if there is a sort of a tipping point where they think, do you know what? We're all having a tough time. I want an ambulance and a fire engine and a school that's open. And I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how I feel about it. But I do wonder if the general public might have less patience for it than perhaps the left side of politics thinks. But I don't, you know. Who knows?
No, I think that there are those opinions that the British public have that I often think, how permanent is that? I think the support from the nurses will probably endure, but it's already been seen with the RMT is that the support from it's become opposition now already.
For the
because
I
mean, it's like, you know, remember with the COVID rules, often when they said to people, do you think people should wear masks? People would say yes, but what they meant by that was people, not me. You know, do you think people should have their lives curtailed for my... Yes. Do you think you should have your life curtailed? And so the theory of supporting the train drivers possibly lasted all right up until people had a thwarted Christmas shopping trip.
Yeah. What they should really ask is, do you think your train should be cancelled?
do you think your shit should be compromised?
Is that in support that your train is cancelled? Not just a sort of esoteric imaginary train, your own train on the way to a birthday party or your work or whatever.
Should you miss your office Christmas party? Yeah, I mean, I think it's weird because this was a manifesto pledge, so there's absolutely no reason why this shouldn't happen. But it's certainly created for some... God, I'm so cliche. There's some fireworks in the comments today. on the thing that... On a broader thing, going back to last week, because after the podcast went up, we had Rishi and Keir Starmer's exciting New Year announcements. What stood out about Rishi's for me, which was I thought was interesting, was I don't know all of them. I mean, I know he said that we're going to halve inflation, we're going to grow the economy in the latter part of the year. And I think it's really, what I like was he set himself goals, which will probably happen by the sheer weight of statistical likelihood.
Right.
It's genius, isn't it? It's like saying, oh, I think that by the middle of January, I'll be slightly less fat than I was on New Year's Day. Because I won't be demolishing after eights for breakfast.
Although goal setting in January is a horrible cliche. At least hang on and do it in February. Did he add at the end? And by the way, I'm doing dry January. I mean, that's
like... You smug little prick. You know, I mean, I think all of it, you know, he said we're going to get NHS waiting list. Certainly the chaos at A&E as the months become warmer. I don't know if it was genius to set them as so achievable, his New Year's resolutions. And what I thought was interesting about the left is that it seemed to be a bit of a bait because people to criticise his goals, they had to continually repeat what they were. I thought that was interesting. Right. It's like the 350 million on the side of the bus. You had to keep saying 350 million. So what they had to keep saying was, so he said he's going to halve inflation. Rishi's going to halve inflation?
That sounds great. Yeah.
And as for his claim that he's going to bring down NHS waiting lists, well, I'm glad to see he's finally getting to grips with that. So I don't know if this was just a simple bit of the political dark arts.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I think he's got a bit of a cheek, though, talking about how he's going to bring back growth when, you know, he basically ousted Liz Truss for having a growth manifesto, really. I think genuinely the ousting of Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng was a really reactionary thing. And I do wonder long term if people will think that was, I mean, I suppose people were so brainwashed by the media to hate them that I do wonder. But growth is going to be quite difficult to create without doing some of the things that they were talking about. You know, you kind of go, hang on, the reason you turfed her out is because of that, and now you're going to...
The original plans of Truss and Kwarteng, I didn't have much issue with the original ones. It was when they started giving it the bravado of like, hang on, I just blinked, I cut another tax. It was the way that they spooked the markets. But I do think that there is a real legacy for what happened there going forward, because Labour now, the fact that we all seem to have tacitly agreed, well, you can't spook the markets, you know, even however temporarily, that creates a massive problem for a left-wing government, because call me old-fashioned, but they like spending a few quid. You know, I think that they're going to...
They're going to spook the markets by their very definition.
Well, I mean, but maybe this is the point, and this sort of ties in with it, is then Keir did his speech, which I thought was quite... And people give me stick for always going for him, but now it's 2 years out from the election, he's odds on to be the next Prime Minister, we do have to give this man scrutiny. And his speech, I thought, was bizarrely devoid of anything. The subject he seemed to go big on was sort of devolution to local authority. Like, that's not really what anybody's talking right now. But he's like, we're going to bring the decision-making, local referendums on fucking bus routes. Go, look, all that stuff is important, but it really isn't going to put fire in anybody's bellies. And then the thing that I think that did maybe land was we said we're not going to get the big checkbook out. Was that? Were you conscious of that phrase? Did that stick in your mind?
I didn't even notice the big checkbook. But as soon as you mention it, I now picture somebody that's just won a TV game show with a massive check. You know, there's these ones that a producer is handing to a celebrity to give to... Yeah, I don't...
Or a poorly child on a telethon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, I'm so sort of politically depressed in the modern world that the idea that... they aren't going to get a big checkbook out because, I mean, they were sort of turbo lockdown. The Labour Party were so anti anybody being able to go out and perform labour that I kind of think, well, you wanted more and harder and further all the way through that. And so you can't really grumble about it now. Like, I can't vote for the Labour Party because they wanted more lockdown and I can't vote for the Tory party because they did lock me down, so
and I can't vote for the Lib Dems because they said bollocks to a democratic mandate, so it's tough out there.
And actually I used to say, like, the Labour Party don't want people to perform any labour, the Conservatives don't seem to want to conserve anything good, and the Liberal Democrats are no longer Liberal or Democratic, so I think we need an investigation into naming things.
It's the opposite of nominative determinism. But however, the Greens still are absolute compost munching, you know.
Absolutely.
They're fully on brand. The other thing that that Rishi said was he came up with this thing about maths, which was just a brilliant bit of. It was funny because, you know, there's that meme of like where it just says no one, and then someone says something under no pressure whatsoever to do so. I kind of thought it was like, you know, if you're waiting for a pay rise off your boss and, you know, everyone thinks they're going to get a pay rise, but he's like, vouchers. It felt like that.
Yes. It's such a Tory move, though, to just suddenly bring out maths. Like, it feels like, like it's sort of the three R's or back to, like, proper education. Like, it feels like...
metric system, the Queen and the armed forces.
Exactly. It's almost like they haven't got Brexit to moan about how bananas are sold in pounds or something anymore. So he's gone, let's talk about maths. And I failed maths GCSE quite a lot of times, so I'm definitely not a Tory on the mathematics.
Well, I mean, the one thing that was that kind of the way that things get pulled out of shape when a Tory says something, social media can pull it way out of shape. So him saying maybe people should do a bit of maths right up to their 18 suddenly became everyone has to do a degree in fucking trigonometry. Yeah. So it wasn't quite that, but it wasn't like the idea was bad, but. You go, right, the education secretary stands up and says that in the Commons. You go, yeah, that's an interesting sort of like a C-plot, essentially. But for the Prime Minister, I mean, you know, it just maybe is the most... He looks like he loves maths. I mean, maybe it's just the most honest thing. He's like, do you know what? I get what you're saying about strikes and cost of living. You know what I'm thinking about? Maths.
Yeah. And also, him being so mega rich and everybody being so obsessed with how rich he is... He probably shouldn't bring up maths because people are going to start going, well, you need maths to count your fucking money.
Yeah, yeah. We've worked out that you are...
need to get to double figures.
the percentage that you are wealthier than the average person doesn't actually fit on the readout of a calculator. Okay, just going to do a quick hype. As I mentioned earlier, I've got the Jeff Norcott and Friends gigs coming up on the 25th of January at the Backyard Comedy Club and on the 2nd of March at the Wardrobe Theatre in Leeds. In terms of the work in progress gigs, most it's about 70% of them are sold out. The one in Wolverhampton / Bilston, they keep asking me to say Wolverhampton because evidently Bilston... I thought Wolverhampton had its own image problems, but Bilston more so. They've extended the capacity at Oldham, which I've been asked to call Saddleworth. I mean, this is what is it, name washing away. I'm sure there's a name for this. Dorking and Darwin are both at about 60% sold, but they're slightly bigger rooms, so you should be able to get tickets there. And Aylesbury's getting close to selling out there. So buy my shit. I mean, I can't dress this up, really. I mean, I make a massive virtue of the fact there's no advertising on this podcast, and that is our glorious patrons who facilitate that. But there's certainly one product that's advertised quite heavily.
Is that Jeff Norcott Live?
just Jeff Norcott stuff. You know, the fact that I have financial responsibilities. On that note, gig-wise and stuff in terms of people, stuff people should look out for yourself with, Alan, you are on Instagram. You're not on Twitter, but you are on Instagram.
I'm not on Twitter. And as far as I'm aware, I'm not on any of your Jeff Norcott and Friends shows. So I'm
you,
like a proper narcissist. I'm thinking, okay, we're colleagues. Fair enough.
Well, mate, if I'd have thought I could have got you to do the one in Leeds, trust me, I would have fucking asked shamelessly.
I'll do any gigs. I'm happy to do gigs.
It would have started with the email. Would have been one of those ones that was started with no worries. If not, it would have been one of those ones. So this section we're going to start with. Now, some of you will go, oh, Prince Harry. And a lot of people seem to want a fucking Pride of Britain award for how little they care about Prince Harry. Like, I couldn't care less. But I sort of thought, well, let's find a different way into this because we are recording this on the day of the publication of this book. And this, you know, historically, this will matter. So there was one of our, one of my patrons, who I should name, his name's Kevin, and he said... is taking the piss out of Prince Harry punching up or punching down? Clearly, he's very privileged, right? But some have suggested he may be suffering from PTSD and or other mental health issues. I'm going to go with and or. Mostly and. Is he acting rationally and in his own best interest based on the disclosures in his book? I mean, I think that there was that line, wasn't there, with Harry, where you go, yeah, it's a fucking weird family. It's a weird upbringing. What happened with your mum was shocking. Everyone's with you up to a point. And then, I don't know, man, recently it sort of became a form of emotional incontinence where you're just shitting out his truth on a daily basis. And just some of it, like you shouldn't say, i.e. the thing about how many Taliban he killed. And then other stuff. I mean, like, is it news to anybody that two sister-in-laws in the build-up to a big family occasion clashed? Alan,
right.
Can you believe that? Two prospective women of a similar age.
Off the front page.
So,
brothers had a scuffle.
Brothers had a scuffle. The younger sibling you know, felt that the older one got certain benefits. The older one feels like the younger one is a bit of a loose cannon. I mean, yeah. So much of this stuff is fairly standard. But yeah. I did start to wonder this question that Kevin's posed here is, are we seeing, like, Harry's saying, I've never been in a better place, but are we seeing, like, a genuine unravelling?
Yes, I think we are. And it's not... it's not good science, but as a social science experiment, I sometimes talk about Harry and Meghan on stage. In fact, I saw you clip a bit of your stuff about Meghan, and I had a very similar journey with Meghan Markle, where when I went off her, I feel like it was because of things that she was saying and they were doing. It wasn't anything to do with her being American or mixed race or any of that stuff. It was literally their behaviour. And I think that's quite... I think that's quite a common feeling in the nation. Mm. But when I talk about Harry and Meghan on stage, I sometimes discuss what versions of Harry there have been. And there's a genuine feeling of kind of empathy when I mention, like, we all feel for grieving child Harry, everybody, like, it was iconic. And then there's the sort of roguish young Harry when he was smoking dope and then he was playing pool with strippers or whatever. There was all those moments and there was dressing as a Nazi, which we all thought was a laugh. But there's a really strange moment when I talk about, I think the best version of Harry for me was setting up the Invictus Games Harry. And I think everybody sort of saw a version of what the future could have then rolled out to. Like, he could have been one of those royals that we all thought, oh, he's a bit of a laugh and he does good work.
Like, yes, yeah, yeah.
He could have so easily just sort of kept that guy going, been a bit of a laugh, but done things that, you know, perhaps some of the more square royals wouldn't have done. Like, even then, like, raising disability awareness and veteran awareness and mental health awareness, that would all have been brilliant. For a guy who's in the royal family, it would have been quite a sort of nice next generation royal family thing. But what a shame the way it's gone, because I do think that sort of the hypocrisy about privacy and the hypocrisy about the environment, and it's just, I think it's really off-putting. People are getting more and more allergic to it. And as for saying that he'd shot the Taliban, killed 25 Taliban, that's just... I actually think what might have happened there is somebody might have said to him, oh, some right-wingers really don't like Meghan, and he's gone, oh, well, she's not the worst. Why don't I bring up the Taliban?
And like, yeah, that'll get it back. We've done a focus group, and people liked Army Harry. He's going, I'll lean into that. I'm all over that, mate. I'll do a kill count. And maybe don't do that.
Where it's really backfired is that the modern left hate the British Army more than the Taliban. So.
Yeah, no, ironically, he didn't really war game that one. I mean, he... what was funny about it as well was that there's some aspects of how the royal family work, i.e. the briefing and the counter-briefing and the leaks and stuff, which I think we all already knew. But he seems to think that the public don't know about this. Right. And he's like one of those guys on social media that will just do like a fairly, like, reasonably well-known fact and say, let that sink in. It's sunk. We know.
You know, the one of those that really annoys me is... unpopular opinion followed by an entirely popular opinion that everybody already agrees with.
Yeah.
Unpopular opinion, guys. I don't think we should judge people based on their skin color. All right.
Is it just me or, you know, is bigotry?
I don't think women should get paid less than men for the same work.
No, you know, just what I think. It's just what I think. So shoot me down. So shoot me down. I mean, it was interesting with the, you know, there was the big takeaway from the Oprah Winfrey interview was when Meghan said that somebody within the royal, it seemed like family at first, we were later led to believe household had speculated as to the colour of their baby, given their difference in sort of racial background. And so when Tom Bradby, who I'd say is fairly on side, oh, good friend of the show, Tom, I've been taking the piss out of the fact how casually he tries to make news seem, Tom Bradby. Hey,
I don't know who he is.
Hey, dude, yeah. I mean, he's the anchor for ITN, so... Often at the beginning of news, he'd be like, yeah, news. Yeah, sure, news. All right, then, let's do some news. He's just, it's quite grating, but he seems very on side with the Sussex, right? So he brings up this question about the allegations of racism over that claim. And then Harry, and you can see that Bradby's shocked by this. Harry goes, never said that was racist. No inference at all. And Bradby's like, dude, I mean, dude, like, you know, all this one's like me. I mean, you definitely, I mean, that was the whole discussion coming out of that was whether or not that was racist. And even Prince Philip was alive at the time, and speculation was initially that it was definitely him. So either you're just pulling a fast one here, or you knew that but didn't come out into the public domain to fully correct that misconception.
It's a weird time to walk back that misconception, having left it hanging in the air for, what, 6 or 8 months or something. I mean, that's...
It's a year and a half, I think.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah. But the way he says it, he's going, well, you think that because the British press said that, so... And you're like, no, we think it's because what your wife said to Oprah Winfrey on global television. I mean, there will come a point, right? There will come a point where he's just, I've said this before, but he has, you know, again, probably not the right metaphor, but he has fired all his bullets now. And I just think unless he ultimately rejoins the royal family for a short spell on loan, there's going to be, you know, we all have to produce content now, unfortunately. Uh-huh. He's going to dry up with the old content. How, like, sort of niche are the stories going to be by book fucking 3 in the third series of the documentary?
Yeah, it's funny you say if he rejoins the royal family. I put something up and somebody said, oh, I think somebody mooted the idea that Meghan has encouraged him to write this book in the hope of him then seeming a bit unstable so that she can divorce him. So this is somebody's guess. You know, people are all Poirot about it. And my first thought was, oh, I think people would actually be kind of delighted if he divorced from Meghan and maybe eventually rejoined the royal family. I think people would see that as a positive, strangely. Not everyone, obviously. There's some people that...
No, I think it would play well. I mean, this is the sick world that he lives in, that there'll be an advisor to go, we think that... There'll come a point where they'll go, we think this plays well. At this point in time, because it's like a member of the family. The thing with Harry, right, I do think if you look at it on paper, what's good at the moment is we have probably blamed Meghan too much for stuff. I do think there's plenty of this coming from him. I think, well, you know, when your mum dies in that way at such a young age, there's every reason why you would be vehemently anti-establishment and why your personality would flip at a given point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anti the press. Like, he's got very good grounds to absolutely hate the tabloid press, I think. But there's still obvious mistakes being made on his side, you know.
She has influence.
I know a few ex-military people, and the question that you never really ask them is, have you killed people and how many? You just don't do that. And he's just blurted it out. Like, where's your game face? You don't tell folk that stuff. The one thing that I think we can all keep our fingers crossed is that the Taliban aren't the kind of people that hold grudges.
They just go, he was young. You know,
We've all had a drink.
Look, I think, you know, there are. I was on the Jeremy Vine show earlier, you know, just a bit of a name drop. Not the main one, even, the Jeremy Vine Extra. And we were talking about, eventually, you know, you do come up with what is the future of the monarchy and do we... I don't think, as far as existential crisis go, I don't think this is up there with the abdication crisis, because that was, you know, the monarch still had a genuine part to play in the country's democratic life, a more central role. I don't think it's as bad as the early 90s. It's easy to forget toe sucking, and this is a difficult thing to talk about. But
I had forgotten toe sucking, but
Toe sucking, the divorces, the Anna Cerebellus. I remember this is a tricky thing to talk about, but the truth is we've collectively wiped this from our minds. People have got quite annoyed with Diana in the period leading up to her death. People have got fed up in, you know, her disclosures in the same way with Harry now. And part of, you know, obviously the horrific and tragic death, the reaction, I think, was partly a form of national guilt, really. Mm-hmm. But in the period leading up to that, people were at the point where they'd sort of heard enough. So I don't know, unless Harry's got an absolute fucking bomb, like there's some mad sister being kept in the attic of Buckingham Palace.
Well, history is actually quite instructive for him, because, you know, There's quite a lot of history of his family and his, you know, his line. He's had a scrap with his brother where he tore his necklace. Richard III put the princes in the tower. Like, it's not as... It's, it's small beer what he's going through comparative to. There's some pretty bloody history amongst royal princes, isn't
there? Yeah, I mean, it was something hilarious about the sort of petty nature of all that. He slipped on the dog bowl, necklace dog broke. I had a tweet that went semi sort of viral where I said that this may be toxic masculinity, but if I had broke my necklace in a fight with my brother, I'd take that shit to the grave. We are racing towards the end of the show here. Just a quick letter. This is from somebody who emailed me, whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. I do read the emails. If you are a patron and you join that, it's more of a direct line. But this is a slight concern for me and maybe other comics. He said, it's Ian Giblet. And it just sounds like a made up name, but I was playing around. This sounds like I've made up a name because there's something that I want to say. Ian Giblet, he said, I was playing around with the AI chat machine on OpenAI called ChatGPT. I'm already confused, but I get roughly what he's talking about, an automated artificial intelligence. He asked it who I was, i.e. me, Jeff Norcott, and it told him that I was a controversial comedian for the reasons below. And this is one of the reasons, among the reasons that it gave. Making jokes about sensitive topics such as rape and domestic violence. That's me, apparently.
Wow.
Criticising progressive movements like feminism and LGBT rights movement. Oh, all right. Oh, you know, look, there's debatable. Defending conservative politicians and policies. Yeah, all right, I'll take that one. Making comments, and this is concerning, making comments that have been perceived as dismissive or hostile towards marginalised groups such as immigrants and Muslims. So I think that's evidently there's an algorithm somewhere that's gone right of centre, must comedian, Jim Davidson, must think this. I'll tell you something, if I had have done all that stuff, I'd have a much bigger YouTube following, that way. YouTube loves all that stuff.
But I mean, a much less busy live diary.
Much busy, yeah. Wouldn't have been quite, lucky enough to do as much as I've done on Radio 4, perhaps, But I just thought it's worth anyone listening to this, you know, any comedians that you like, because I don't know if it's just me, but could I sue these fuckers, Alan? I mean, but they said stuff that's not true. I could do with a few quid. There's credit card bills looming. Yeah, I don't know if anybody else has. So if people are bored, you could go on and this ChatGPT, go on. Mention your favourite comedians, right? And do some left-wing ones, because I'm damn sure that the left-wing one will go, lovely bloke, top geezer, only has tried to make a better world.
it won't say, tweeted support for Chairman Mao.
Yeah, which was great. And then anybody over on the bad side, it'd be interesting to see what they think about us. But listen, Alan, it's been brilliant to have you back on the podcast, mate. You talk about your gratitude for club gigs. Have you got club gigs coming up this weekend?
I'm gigging away. I'm considering starting a podcast, Jeff. I know it's a cliche, but I'm still thinking about it. I'm not one that rushes into things.
Well, all things become cliches for a good reason.
Yeah.
And ultimately, as men of our age, what we all really want is some sort of benevolent dictatorship where we can. I've noticed that since I've done this, I've paid for less counselling. So make of that what you will.
All right, I'm in.
Okay, well, listen, thanks so much for appearing back on What Most People Think. I look forward to seeing you again soon. Cheers, Alan Cochrane.
Thank you.
And I'll be back with another podcast next week.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.